Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stopping, staring. I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast wind, sailing on summer breeze. And skipping over the ocean like a stone. The northeast winds sailing on summer breeze and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave.
Good evening, folks. It is Wednesday, January 8th, 2020. You've just been listening to Harry Nilsson with Everybody's Talking, when in fact it's really just me. I am Hank Jones, and you are on Hank Jones Polysports, part of Blog Talk Radio's Global Patriot Radio Network. Yes, every Wednesday I am here, whether you like it or not. Whether you want it or not, I am here bringing you politics and sports. Sometimes they even meet, and it's rarely pretty. That's what I do. If you'd like to call and talk, there is a phone number, 319-527-6706. Call, talk, tell me what you want to hear, tell me what you want to say, tell me what you're feeling, tell me what you're thinking, etc. You can always email me, hjpsports@gmail.com. Absolutely. I shortened it. Remember that long one I had? Hank Jones Polysports 1980. Now it's just hjpsports 1980. You got to have the 1980. I forgot about that. It's hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Remember that long one? Ooh. Hank Jones Polysports 1980. I still sign into Twitter with that, by the way. It's pretty long. And by the way, you can get me on Twitter. At H Polysports. That's me. Or Facebook. Nobody ever wants to interact on Facebook anymore. I still do because I like looking at funny memes and stuff, but I already got my one Facebook violation a few months back. So, and I share stuff, but for the most part, I only share stuff that I, you know, it can't be opinion or anything like that. It's just stupid almost. So anyway, that's what's going on. That's how you get me. Got a lot going on today, actually. We'll start with sports news. We'll see. The bowl season's pretty much finished. I mean, we've got the college football playoff final next Monday, but the bowl season itself is finished. Let's give you a rundown on how the conferences did. I'll go alphabetically for the Power Five first. the ACC, your Atlantic Coast Conference, went 4-6. Now they still have one more game with Clemson, so they're either going to go 4-7 or 5-6. The Big 12's done. They went 1-5. It was not pretty. It was not pretty at all. Big 10 went 4-5. Big 10 was doing well the first day or two, and then Ohio State got that rook job against Clemson. And look, it's over. It's done. It's not going to change the score, but there were some terrible calls in there. Speaking of poly sports. The Pac-12 went 4-3. Actually had a pretty good bowl season for them. Now, they didn't have anybody in the playoff, but they did finish the bowl season with a winning record. That's probably why, by the way. Except the SEC, man, SEC went 7-2. And they got another one with LSU coming up this Monday against Clemson. So, yeah, they're either going 8-2 or 7-3. That's pretty stellar. I mean, as much as I like to say that top to bottom, the Big Ten's is good. Well, when it comes to the top nine teams, got to tell you, the SEC is a better conference, no doubt. The group of five, American Athletic Conference went 4-3. Decent bowl season for them. Conference USA went 3-5. The MAC went 3-4. The Mountain West went 4-3, although its winner, Boise State, got trounced by 7-5 Washington in their bowl. Ironically, Washington's coach, that was his final game, Chris Peterson, he was formerly the coach at Boise State. So, Sun Belt Conference went 3-2. Independence went 2-1. Mainly the flagship, of course, being Notre Dame, who pretty much wiped the field with Iowa State. Not my Iowa Hawkeyes. I already told you, the Hawkeyes just took it to USC, but Iowa State did not look good. Let's run down the fired coaches that we've had thus far. Joe Moorhead was the latest from Mississippi State. Prior to that, we saw Steve Adazio bounced at Boston College. Charlie Strong from South Florida right after the season. Willie Taggart from Florida State, that was in season. More on him later. Tony Sanchez at UNLV. Frank Wilson at UTSA, Texas San Antonio. Barney Odom at Mizzou, which is kind of sad. They had a 6-6 record, and they weren't eligible for a bowl, but he didn't survive the season. Chad Morris at Arkansas, I think he was an in-season one as well. Matt Luke at Ole Miss, he lost his job after they lost their bowl game, I guess. That was Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State. Matt Luke was after they lost their season finale against Mississippi State. Chris Ash at Rutgers was another in-season casualty. And then we've had, Bob Davey of New Mexico, he's resigned. Jeff Tedford at Fresno State also resigned. Eli Drinkwitz left Appalachian State. He's going to Missouri for Barney Odom. Mike Norvell left Memphis to go to Florida State. Mike Bobo resigned at Colorado State, and that's where Steve Adazio from Boston College is going. Lane Kiffin left Florida Atlantic for Ole Miss, and Willie Taggart slides in there at Florida Atlantic now. Bobby Wilder resigned at Old Dominion. No word on that. Chris Peterson, as I mentioned, resigned, kind of abruptly from Washington. In the weirdest hire in the offseason, Greg Schiano at Rutgers. He had been a coach at Rutgers before and had great success there, really. Went on to coach the Tampa Bay Bucks, and then he was a position coach at various places, including Ohio State. And then he was all set to be the hire at Tennessee. And then Phil Fulmer and crew led a revolt there. And it was pretty disgusting what they did to him. But he lost out on that. But he is now going back to Rutgers. After breaking down and the negotiations breaking down, they weren't going to make a commitment to the program. And so Schiano said, forget it. No, evidently they re-upped and renewed a commitment to their facilities and their program. And so Greg Schiano is back at Rutgers. The two hottest seats going into 2020 got to be in the next season. Will Muschamp at South Carolina. I got to believe if he doesn't get 7 or 8 wins this year, this coming season, he's done. Clay Helton at Southern Cal, USC, victimized by the Hawkeyes. It's funny, they got rid of their defensive coordinator, which, if you've watched Iowa's offense all season, you kind of understand why. I mean, we put up 42 points. Well, technically, we put up 35. We put up 7 on a defensive touchdown and 7 on a special teams. And that was the other casualty. The special teams coach was let go. Ironically, though, at the beginning of the second half, after that kickoff return touchdown by Amir Smith-Marset, they executed a perfectly done onside kick. But evidently, that wasn't good enough for the special teams coach to keep his job. Poor guy. Okay, let's talk our college football playoff championship game this week. This Monday, it's LSU, Louisiana State, the Bayou Bengals, the Tigers, whatever you want to call them, take on the Clemson Tigers. Hey, Chief, how you doing? Chief's in the chat. So LSU takes on Clemson this week, this coming Monday. That's in New Orleans. Yeah, so location, obviously, so let's check that one up. That's got to go LSU's way. Experience, defending CFP title holders, that's got to favor Clemson, of course. Now, Clemson has been tested more, especially in their semifinal against Ohio State, so they got that. Statistics, gaudiness goes to LSU. They put up some offensive numbers this year that were almost – startling for a major conference team. Usually those kinds of numbers you see with teams that are, you know, group of five or fringe teams that just kind of, you know, play in the middle of a nowhere conference. And so they have that one offense that's unique, but no, LSU put up freak numbers, especially Joe Burrow. His Heisman was well-deserved, no doubt. Here's the thing though, per game, their scoring offense only averages 3.6 points per game more than Clemson. On the defensive side of the ball, Clemson allows exactly half the points that LSU has allowed, 10.6 to 21.2. Now, some of that you can talk about the fact that, you know, LSU's playing in the SEC. It's definitely a tougher conference than the ACC. So there is that, but still, you know, you can't overlook it either. LSU averaged their yards per game differential. It's only 25.7 yards per game better than Clemson. And Clemson, on the other hand, yields almost 100 yards less per game than LSU. Now, conference-wise, again, LSU had a tougher conference slate. But out of conference, LSU played Northwestern State, which is an FCS team, Georgia Southern, which is a Sun Belt team. They played Texas, who won their bowl game. You know, so Texas is the bowl winner from the Pac or from the Big 12, and then they beat Utah State, yeah, from the Mountain West. So okay, so they beat a team that they outscored those teams 207-61. So they averaged basically winning 52-15. Now Clemson beat Texas A&M from the Big 12, Charlotte from Conference USA, and Wofford, who's another FCS team, although they were a playoff team. They won a collective 135-11. You know, it's hard to say. They have one common opponent, Texas A&M. They both played Texas A&M at their home field, so Texas A&M was the visiting team both games. In week two, Clemson won 24-10. And going into that game, there were some Texas A&M players that were saying, we're going to win this game. This is going to be a shock. LSU beat them 50-7. Now, that was week 14. At that point, LSU is just on a roll. Texas A&M's got really nothing much to play for at that point. Vegas is favoring LSU by 6. The over-under is 69.5. First of all, if you bet, I don't bet, but if you bet, good Lord, take that over. Take the over. 69.5, I don't care how good their defenses can be. These teams score. But I'll tell you something else. The LSU is the media choice, mainly because most of the media that's not ESPN still favors SEC stuff. Don't be surprised if Clemson wins this game. I'm not picking them, but don't be surprised if Clemson wins. One wild card you got. I talked a little bit in my previous two shows about officiating. I guess this would be the poly sports part of the show today, since I really don't have much poly sports, but officiating has been awful this bowl season, and there have been replays. I mean, literally where the replay booth overturns calls on the field that are just unexplainable, inexplicable, unbelievable, just terrible replay officials. I don't know how, any other way to say it. I mean, you know, at first I thought, well, okay, Hank, you're wearing the tinfoil hat. No, I'm not. I mean, I saw plays overturned. Anyone that saw Ohio State Clemson, Clemson guy caught a ball, was running with it. It was jarred loose. Ohio State picked it up, ran it back for a touchdown. That was the field call. I don't even know why they decided to review it. The only thing I can think of, it's an ESPN game. ESPN owns the ACC network. They don't own the Big Ten network. That's owned by Fox, majority stake. So, you know, ESPN controls the replay booth, you know, or at least the camera angles on the field. That's the only thing I can think of is somehow somebody, some higher up at ESPN said, hey, why don't you review this? I see wiggle room here. You know, you could say, oh, he might have not had possession. It is supposed to be indisputable evidence. There was nothing remotely indisputable about that. Now, Ohio State needed to score at other times. I mean, you can't blame one call. The targeting call at another point was a bad call, but not, you know, you're protecting the quarterback there. Yes, Trevor Lawrence lowered his shoulder, but you know, that's you can't be against protecting a player. But that again, that's reviewable. That was not called on the field. The replay booth called it up to review it. That's where I have a problem. You can review that, but you can't review an obvious pass interference, although you can in the NFL, but you can't in college still. You can review too many men on the field, but you can't review a guy that jumps off a guy's back to block a field goal, which is illegal. I mean, you know, they've got to decide either everything's reviewable, nothing's reviewable, or something that makes sense. But what they have now doesn't make sense. So that'll be the wild card, in my opinion. How the officiating goes. If there's a bad call that can turn it, when you're talking two pretty much equally matched teams, that can swing the tide, and that shouldn't happen. So that's enough about college football for right now. Let's go quickly to college basketball. Big Ten is absolutely brutal this season. My Hawkeyes took a beating last night. We are down a lot of people. We have some injuries and some sickness, et cetera. But anyway, it's not just us. I mean, Ohio State got beat up on by Maryland. Rutgers beat Penn State, who beat Iowa last Saturday. But they're just killing each other. There seems no team is safe. I mean, every team has pulled some kind of upset. Speaking of which, I talked last spring in my first initial shows about the FBI basketball cheating scandal. One of the coaches that I don't want to say was a focus, but one of the coaches who did come up, Roy Williams at North Carolina, this dork, I could get worse, but I'll say dork. This guy threw his team under the bus. Basically, he called this team, quote, the least gifted I've ever coached. Now that's just at North Carolina, I assume, but what a piece of crap. I mean, you've had an academic fraud scandal. You all but pay your players, as we've known, as we've learned. You blame it on guys leaving early for the NBA, and then you call your team the least talented. Here's an idea, Roy. Stop acting like you're so damn entitled. Now, I've never been a Fran McCaffrey fan. He's the Iowa coach. But I'll tell you what. This guy lost Tyler Cook to the NBA. He lost Isaiah Moss to transfer to Kansas, Roy, your old school. He lost Maishi Daly to a MAC school for transfer. Then he lost Jack Nungy to an ACL injury. Jordan Bohannon, who had off-season hip surgery, is now getting his other hip worked, or had it worked on. He's now lost C.J. Frederick, who's out for an undetermined period with a stress reaction in his foot. Cordell Pemsel still has some injury issues. Luca Garza has been beaten and bruised like one of your recruiting hostesses, Roy. To top it off, Fran McCaffrey's son, Patrick, was diagnosed with cancer in 2014. Now, he was treated. He beat it. He played in high school. but it's a much less rigorous schedule. Now, so Patrick's had some issues with his cancer stuff. The cancer hasn't returned, but his treatment stuff, it's tough to get a balance on it. He's fatigued, etc. And I got to say, I have not heard Fran McCaffrey bitch once about all this. I have not heard him whine, complain, etc. And the last thing he has done is thrown his team under the bus and say, this is at least gifted. So, Roy, rather than bitch and moan and complain, sack up. You know, it just goes to show other teams are cheating now, just like you do. So sack up. Just ask the FBI. Other teams are cheating. It's just, you know, the FBI should be at your campus pretty much every other week, Roy. And all you got to say is, this is the least gifted team I've ever coached. What a jackass. Here's a bit of a departure in college basketball. Gonzaga. They've held down the number one spot for 3 straight weeks. I'm not sure what in the hell is going on there. They didn't get the memo, evidently. But the previous 8 number ones all lost. It's like they get number one in the polls, and about 14 seconds later, they get beat. Gonzaga evidently has decided not to do that. Let's get back to some college football real quick. Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm, i.e. Jake from State Fromm, is the latest early entry for the NFL draft. He joins Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, Ohio State running back J.K. Dobbins, Wisconsin running back Jonathan Taylor, Wisconsin center Tyler Biadasz, who won the, I believe, the Remington or the Outland or maybe both. Those guys have all decided to forego any remaining eligibility. And for the most part, I especially with Jonathan Taylor, running backs and Dobbins as well, running backs just don't have the longevity in the NFL anymore. They're almost plug and play and disposable. So you got to get while the getting's good. I get it. I mean, you know, selfishly, if you're a fan of a team, you wish your guys would stay. But in this case, you know, hey, welcome Golf Dogs as well to the chat. Golf Dogs in Chief in the chat. So if anybody wants to jump in, you got some knowledge here, folks. Guys that know what they're talking about. Oh, when I talked about the coaching stuff earlier, we can add Rocky Long is stepping down at San Diego State. And it looks like Brady Hoke, a former coach there, and then later at Michigan, it looks like he's stepping back stepping back in to be the Aztecs' new coach. So here's some other names that are entering the draft that I would call impactful. Eno Benjamin at Arizona State, Lynn Bowden at Kentucky, Quintez Cephas at Wisconsin, Gabe Davis at UCF, A.J. Dillon at Boston College, Jacob Eason at Washington, Yetur Gross-Matos at Penn State, K.J. Hamler from Penn State, Jerry Giudi from Bama, CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma, a couple great receivers, Javon Leak and Anthony McFarlane, couple stud running backs at Maryland, Xavier McKinney at Bama, Donovan Peoples-Jones from Michigan, Henry Ruggs III from Bama, Cesar Ruiz from Michigan, Geno Stone, one of my Hawkeyes, and he's not going to be the last. I got for Hawkeye fans out there, just accept it that AJ Epenesa and Tristan Wirfs are also going to declare when the time comes. Also, DeAndre Swift from Georgia, Antonio Winfield Jr. from Minnesota, Chase Young from Ohio State. Here's some interesting guys that are returning. KJ Britt is staying at Auburn. Nico Collins is staying at Michigan. Sam Ellinger is staying at Texas. Devontae Smith is staying at Bama. So doesn't mean everyone's going. And a couple of Iowa guys have said they didn't even put in for it. So, you know, it just depends. I mean, at a certain point, you know, guys are still, you know, here's the thing. I don't know how old all my listening audience is. When I was in college in the 80s, guys went home on breaks. Guys went home in between summer, you know, spring semester and summer semester for those that stayed in the summer. There wasn't year-round stuff. I mean, there were guys that worked out year-round, but there wasn't year-round lifting. There wasn't summer drills. There wasn't, you know, summer camp opened the season. Before that, guys had a chance to be kids, you know, outside of football or basketball or whatever. I remember basketball guys from Iowa that actually went somewhere on spring break, for instance, depending on the schedule, of course. But now they're there year round. So guys are graduating in 3 years, 3.5 years. Some guys are getting to campus a semester early. They're leaving high school in the middle of their senior year, getting to college early, going every summer, you know, because they're there anyway. They're working out anyway. So why not get your credits? It's being paid for God's sake. So, yeah, I get it. I get it. You know, guys are leaving earlier. They can. Why not? You know, especially if it's, you know, I'm not one of those guys that when a guy sits out the bowl game, that pisses me off. But, you know, leaving early, who am I to say? Okay, let's get to politics. Let's just get right into the Iran situation. Now, I'm going to go right away. I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to go as in-depth as the other show hosts. I'm not going to be as deep, as knowledgeable as the nuances that they have. They're better versed in this. The other hosts are better versed. They're, you know, it's a matter of week to week, show to show. These guys are on it. And girls. But you know, so don't look to me for analysis and all that and legalities. There's not, you know. But let's just go through a brief timeline, though. May of 2019, Iran attacked oil tankers in various bodies of water, the Persian Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz. In June, they shot down a U.S. drone. In July, they attacked and seized a British oil tanker. In September, they attacked Aramco, the Saudi state-run oil company, which is actually a partnership with Americans. It's Arabian American Oil Company. In December, they attacked U.S. military bases in Iraq. They stormed the U.S. embassy in Iraq. They've been responsible, both in general aggression and from Soleimani-led attacks, for hundreds, if not thousands, of deaths of U.S. soldiers and contractors and other U.S. citizens. So, right there, there's a timeline. So, in January 2020, the U.S. does an airstrike in Baghdad. Based on in-depth intel and info, and they take out General Soleimani. So here's what the left, the media, and just basically the ill-informed, they're actually saying President Trump has started a war against Iran. I kid you not. That's what they're saying. We don't have any business starting a war. We didn't start a war in Iran, people. They showed people today coming out of these briefings that are like, I mean, we actually have Democratic representatives and senators saying, even after they've been briefed, they are saying that they're more convinced than ever that the strike on Soleimani wasn't necessary. House Democrats intend to attempt action to limit President Trump's war powers. And they're complaining that they weren't briefed in advance, some of them. Can you even imagine the consequences of someone like Adam Schiff or Nadless Nadler or Nancy Pelosi? Or can you imagine Ilhan Omar getting briefed on this, having advance notice of pretty much any military or intel operation? Can you imagine? I mean, good Christ, these people are dangerous enough in front of a microphone or even in a committee meeting. The very last thing we need is these absolute blabbermouths knowing the slightest bit of info about any imminent engagement. I mean, these people don't deserve to know when I'm going to log on to my email. They can't keep anything a secret. They can't keep any. I mean, they manipulate. It's unbelievable that some of these people are actually complaining that they weren't let in on it. And yet they can't keep their mouth shut about anything. Okay, meanwhile, Newsweek on their website had an article posted last night, believe it or not, quoted a tweet from Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, stating that Iran's missile attack on Iraqi air bases was the end of their response to U.S. airstrikes, and that they do not seek to escalate war, but will defend themselves against further aggression. Yeah, okay, I'll believe that. Iraq's parliament, meanwhile, those folks voted last Sunday to remove all U.S. forces from the country. President Trump has insisted U.S. troops will remain. Personally, this is just personally, not professionally, not insider info or anything. This is just personally. This is Hank talking. I say we leave. Let those people fight amongst themselves. I'm serious. The U.S. has enough energy resources without the Middle East. I mean, we have enough energy resources without the Middle East. We let someone else go in there and get vilified for trying to be helpful. See what Chief says. He's heard some suggestions. It makes sense that when Iran retaliated by launching missiles at the airbase in Iraq, they were shooting to deliberately miss. It was all about being seen. About saving face. I would wholeheartedly agree with that, Chief. Wholeheartedly. Hence the foreign minister saying we've done what we needed to do. But seriously, let somebody else go in there. And frankly, if they do, our Congress should vote in kind. Why don't we get rid of Iraqi nationals, Iranian nationals, Arabs, Egyptians, Jordanians, Yemenis, Omanis, whatever. I don't care. Let them leave, too. Let's escort them out. Post-haste, as a matter of fact. I mean, seriously. Okay, and some more mundane and, frankly, incredibly stupid political news. Here's one from campusreform.org. You're going to love this one. A UCLA professor says, and I quote, "We need to seriously question the idea of private home ownership," end quote. Yeah, Professor Kian Go, she's an urban planning professor, and she's supposedly an expert at UCLA. She claims, among other things, that aspirations of home ownership and belief in the importance of private property are contributors to climate change, including the California wildfires. Yeah, she also states that the Jefferson agrarian ideal, cheap energy, and individual property, quote, have created the scorching landscapes we see today. I'm telling you, sometimes this stuff writes itself, and it's entertainment. It really is. Now, speaking of entertainment, the Golden Globes were last Sunday. Did anybody watch that? I didn't tune to it, but let me tell you what happens. I'm a cord cutter, as I've talked about before, so I have Hulu. That's my main. I also use Amazon Prime. I use some free apps, but I have Hulu. I pay bottom price for Hulu, for just basic Hulu. I don't see anything live. I don't get it until the next day. I don't care, because even when I had live and had a DVR or whatever, I didn't watch it until the next day or several days after. So anyway, I'm watching TV last night. And we fall asleep, and this is two nights ago. We fall asleep, and we, in our bedroom, my wife and I, we will let the TV sort of run through its course. And Hulu has autoplay feature, so it'll go to something else, either from the same network, like if you're watching an NBC show, or it'll go to something of like subject matter. Well, evidently, we had, I think my wife was watching The Bachelor, believe it or not, or something, The Bachelor or something. And so on came, at about 2 in the morning, on autoplay came the Golden Globes, and I woke up for some reason. Go figure. Probably because I go to sleep at about 8 o'clock now. I'm getting to that age of get off my lawn. So anyway, Ricky Gervais was the host. Now, I don't know his politics, but he's funny as hell, and he'll crack on anyone. And he cracked on these Hollywood elites big time. I mean, he was like, "You don't know what the hell you're talking about. You have no business talking about political stuff. You don't have a clue as to what's going on in the real world." He then dropped an F-bomb, evidently. So anyway, one of the people that won an early award was Russell Crowe. And Russell Crowe couldn't be there, but he was part of the Hollywood elite that Ricky Gervais just absolutely lambasted. So Russell Crowe is, quote-unquote, home helping with the wildfire effort in Australia. Meaning he's making sure that his own stuff doesn't get scorched. He's making sure his own wine collection and his beer taps don't get blown up or something, most likely. But he made a comment in his speech that basically this is man-made climate change that is causing the wildfires that I'm here to fight in Australia. Evidently, Russell Crowe missed out. There have been 24 arson arrests related to these wildfires. Somehow the news has not figured out that maybe that's to blame. You know, that I guess, okay, I'm going to give them this. I'm going to count now. I'm going to redefine. This is Hank's redefinition now, or moment. I'm going to redefine man-made climate change. I'm going to call arson man-made climate change. I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to let them go ahead and claim that, okay? Sure, it's man-made climate change. It's also a criminal act, people. Your cow letting a fart, and your cow out in Wyoming or Iowa or Texas ripping a fart, that's not man-made climate change. And it's not illegal. So, okay, we're going to give them man-made climate change on arson, but it's still illegal. So, I mean, you don't need to tell me to stop driving. You don't need to tell me to stop eating meat or whatever. You just need to tell these ass clowns that are starting fires not to start fires, and then we won't have that man-made climate change. Yes, Chief, it is man-made, absolutely, but it's illegal. I mean, arson is illegal. You could say man-made climate change when people cut down the Amazon. I don't know that it's climate change per se because it does regrow, but that's man-made. But it's also oftentimes illegal. Now, not always, but usually it is. What people were doing, the deforestation in Madagascar was highly illegal. And, you know, again, that's a crime. So you don't tell innocent people to stop using refrigerators. You tell people to stop deforesting and stop committing arson. It's the same as with a gun crime. When a guy goes into a high school and shoots it up, you don't tell me to stop defending myself in my home. You arrest people that go in and do those things. You arrest people that assist them. You arrest people at schools that knew that these kinds of things could happen, but because President Obama didn't want statistics to impede their lovely record, you put those people in jail. You don't put lawful gun owners in jail. Same deal here, Mr. Crow. These are people starting fires. This isn't climate change out of thin air, so to speak. But yeah, Ricky Gervais just absolutely railed on him. It was absolutely hilarious. It really was. And I normally don't give much deal to that. Speaking of climate maniacs, Fox News reported on evidently Maxine Waters, Representative Maxine Waters, was pranked by these Russian dudes. I don't know if it's the same ones that pranked Schiff a couple of years ago or last year. Anyway, Maxine Waters thought she was on a call with the Swedish climate maniac puppet Greta Thunberg, but it was the work of the Russian pranksters, YouTube guys. She thought she was getting dirt on President Trump. Her statements and reactions all but confirmed, by the way, that they're the all-out, all-costs impeachment hoax. She said things like, "Oh, really? He said that?" And evidently one was impersonating Greta Thunberg's father and, quote-unquote, the president made her cry. And Maxine Waters wants them to come to Washington and say, because they made her cry, or President Trump made her cry. So, yeah. Evidently, she's like, there's no word yet on whether she actually knows that she got pranked. She hasn't commented to Fox. So my guess is she may not even know. Seriously. Okay, here's a good one from Patheos.com. There's an op-ed from a guy named Gene Vaith, or Vaith. He really knocks on these claims. There's these claims from people that having pets is no longer politically correct. Among the arguments cited, okay, a key right of any animal is the right not to be property. They also say pet ownership is akin to slavery. Loving your pet is immoral because it makes them dependent on you, the owner. In a just world, there would be no pets, no farms, no aquaria, no zoos, no farms with fields full of sheep, pigs, cattle, or egg-laying hens. If you have a pet, you need to be aware of your pet's ecological footprint. I'm not making this up. You go to Paytheos.com and look up Gene Vith. This includes the food chain, such as shipping and transport, the fact that pet food is often remnants of the human food chain, the creation of greenhouse gases, as well as pet feces. One must also not allow any pets to reproduce. Now, I'll note this is me. This is my intrusion here. These are some of the same folks who justify abortion on the basis of the fact that you're forcing suffering on another being by bringing it into the world. Chief is correct. If you have a pet, you shouldn't eat it. I am petting my pet right now. I have a gorgeous little miniature Australian Shepherd, an awesome dog, and she's awesome, and no. And I'll be damned if I feel like I'm treating her as property. She runs our house, as a matter of fact. But no, these are the same folks abortion on the basis of forcing a life of suffering on a human being simply by virtue of the fact that all life includes suffering. In short, folks, we just got some sick pups. Some sick folks, let's say that, not sick pups. Pups can't be, not mentally sick. There's some sick people out there. Just twisted. Just so awfully and hilariously and insanely clueless that are out there. They just don't get it. Seriously, pet ownership is is no longer political. The fact that he can even say politically correct is just mind-boggling. Chief, I am not going to sue my dog. Although, I'm feeling now that since we have gay marriage and trans marriage and adoption and stuff, at some point someone's going to sue to marry a dog. I'm sure that's coming. Or a pet, some pet. We've had people bring their emotional support ponies on airplanes. So yeah, I'm sure it's coming. It's a matter of when, not if, but there's some sick, twisted people in this country and on this planet. I'm telling you that right now. You probably didn't need me to tell you that, but there are. I'm going to take a quick break. This is a water break, total admission here. Water break just to get the throat lathered up a bit. So take a quick music break. I'll be back in about a minute and 44 seconds. Okay, we are back. This is Hank Jones with Hank Jones Poly Sports. We are part of Blog Talk Radio's Global Patriot Radio Network. And in that vein, this might surprise some folks, I am not the only show on this network. Of course I'm not. Mondays, Vito and Big Al, 6 o'clock, they bring you Mamma Mia No Sharia. They go for 2 hours every Monday at 6 o'clock. It's good stuff. And that's why I talked about before, I'm not going to get into the stuff going on in Iran. Those guys are so far ahead of me on that, what's going on in the Arab and Muslim world and Irani world. Irani are not Arabs, they are Persians. So in the Muslim world. Tuesdays, Eric brings you Radio Free Kafiristan. Eric also goes at 6 o'clock. I, of course, going 6 o'clock on Wednesdays. Paul Sutliff, the Sutliffian Report, on Thursdays. I think Paul might be going at 6, but check that. He might be going at 7. Fridays, either 12 noon or 1 o'clock, Andrew Herod with Islam in Focus. Saturday nights, that's where it gets a little different. 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie, revealing the truth about Islam. That's every Saturday night from 10 p.m. to midnight. And then Sundays, Eric is back hosting Real Interfaith Dialogue. And that's, again, usually 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, depending, I think. So, yeah, like I said, I am not the only show on the network. You've got other great shows, very informative shows, very entertaining hosts, and very intelligent hosts. Okay, Vorp is also in the chat room, and he brought something up. I mentioned marrying your dog. Vorp mentioned Nikola Tesla married his pet bird. So I Googled it, Vorp. Unfortunately, it took me to Huffington Post, which I almost hurled, but I'm just going to read it, okay? Nikola Tesla is best known for his pioneering research in electricity and robotics and for his numerous inventions, which include the eponymous Tesla coil. The Serbian-born scientist inventor is also known for his strange obsessions and some truly bizarre behavior. How many people do you know who have fallen in love with a bird? He had a thing about the number 3. He was a genius, but he had more than his share of quirks. He was absolutely fixated on the number 3, washing his hands 3 times in a row, and even walking around a building 3 times before entering it. He detested pearls. He couldn't stand the sight of them. In fact, he hated them so much that he refused to speak to women who wore them. He was celibate. He was not married for life. He once said, "I do not think you can name many great inventions that have been made by married men." He reportedly thought that sex would hinder his scientific work. He lived in a hotel room. He lived many years in New York City and spent his last decade there living in the Hotel New Yorker in room 3327, a two-room suite on the 33rd floor. And it's where his peculiar fondness for pigeons played out. Ooh. He was unusually, this is number 5, he was unusually fond of pigeons. Lots of folks feed pigeons in the park. Tesla didn't stop there. He used to find ailing pigeons and bring them back to his hotel room. One pigeon in particular stole his heart. As he wrote about her, "I loved that pigeon as a man loves a woman, and she loved me. As long as I had her, there was a purpose to my life." Wow. He believed in eugenics. He believed some people just weren't fit to produce offspring. So he was a sick puppy. Okay. He claimed to have invented a death ray. And that's pretty much it. So it didn't say if he married his pet bird, Vorp. I didn't want to call you on that. But didn't say if he married her. But yeah, he certainly seemed attracted to her, if that's the right word. Like I said before, there are some sick folks in this world. And historically speaking, evidently he was one of them. Let's get to some miscellany. Impeachment news. What impeachment, you ask? Think about this. Can you imagine if a grand jury brought a murder indictment? Now, imagine that a state or district attorney who has presented evidence to the grand jury has decided he's not going to bring this case forward until he's sure of how the trial is going to be conducted. Can you imagine that? I mean, think of what's a high profile case. Scott Peterson is one. Can you imagine if they said, well, we're not sure what kind of jury we're going to get, or we're not sure the judge. We don't know what they, I mean, come on. We don't even know what the defense attorney is going to be like. We're not sure if we want witnesses to be called, even though we called them in front of the grand jury. That's what this impeachment hoax is like. So my resolution, hopefully in 2020, it will bring this stupid hoax to an end. Seriously. I mean, just whacked. Okay, more stuff on the Mueller investigation in the Inspector General reports, etc. They're bringing to light some very suspect investigative evidence-gathering methods with respect to, as an example, General Flynn, where Peter Strzok and whoever he was interviewing with felt that they pretty much felt Flynn wasn't lying. But it went back to higher-ups, didn't say if it was actually Mueller or who it was, but then they brought it back and forced him, basically just kept badgering him until he took a plea. But they felt he wasn't lying. And that was exculpatory evidence or a statement, and it was not allowed to be presented. Other stuff, the FISA warrants, as we know, that were brought forth based on a dossier that was just absolute fabrication. Okay, so we already knew all this. So what I'm hoping for in 2020 is that actual criminals will be brought to the forefront and be brought to justice. Let's bring some actual criminals, is what I would say. And that includes you, President Trump. I mean, you are the leader of the executive branch, so it behooves you to get – I mean, yes, there are deep staters in there. Yes, there are people that are hindering this. Root them out. And you know, somebody made a point with the Iran-Iraq stuff that it's quite possible, President Clinton, when he was under investigation, there was a point, at one point, there was revealed a plot from Saddam Hussein to assassinate former President George H.W. Bush. And President Clinton retaliated. And believe it or not, the Republicans in Congress did not go after him for it. Now, many thought, many in the media even said, and many many of the public thought this is smokescreen. Republicans in Congress had enough sense to say, look, this is a situation where a foreign leader has called for assassination of a president. We're going to let President Clinton do what he thinks needs to be done in this case. We're not going to call it out right now. So they didn't. Some people think that there are Democrats who have actually pushed Iran and Iraq to do some of this, to call their attention away from the impeachment hoax. It's not President Trump doing it. Now, Ilhan Omar did say she thought that he was just starting fires and so that he could get credit for putting them out. But that's because she's a maniac and a nut job anyway. But there are people that think, and I'm not discounting it. I'm not saying I believe it, but I'm not discounting the fact that maybe there are those on the left that are reaching out to some folks in the Middle East to take some heat and some light off of the crap that they have tried to perpetrate and now can't get out from under. So think about that. So hopefully 2020, we will see real criminals brought to the forefront. Now, another thing that's just irked the crap out of me. I've been seeing these, various, depending on the website or depending on the social media, Twitter, Facebook, news sites, they go to these live feeds and live watches. House and Senate Democrats both have been continuing to act as literally as if they live and see and hear in a completely frigging alternate world. One clown got up and actually said, after being briefed on the strike against Soleimani, that he's more convinced than ever that it wasn't necessary. What is he? Are you kidding me? We know that there were plans of attack. against U.S. interests. It's not up for debate. And this clown, he couched it in terms of, well, getting rid of Soleimani won't necessarily stop the aggression. Well, of course not. It won't. You know, it's just, it's really bizarre that I don't know, these people. So hopefully 2020 brings back a Republican House and keeps a Republican Senate. And I'm not all fired up about what some of the Republicans have done by any means, but hopefully, you know, some of the Republicans that are retiring and not seeking re-election, hopefully those are the ones that get replaced with real actual conservatives. So that's what I'm hoping for in 2020 on that score. Now, this one, I'm going to rant a bit. You know me, I rant. I go into these rants. This is a Second Amendment rant. I will continue to do Second Amendment rants because I can. Okay. As we know, Michael Bloomberg, former mayor, I call him Bloomberg because he's the most boring, dull, gloomy bastard out there, has announced that he's running for president. I believe he's is an independent, but maybe he's is a crat. I don't know. Bloomberg's latest is we can't just let average Americans have guns. So I'm going to read this article by Cam Edwards on bearingarms.com. Okay. Gun control sugar daddy and Democrat. Okay, so he is a Democrat. Gun control sugar daddy and Democrat presidential candidate Michael Bloomberg was asked about the shooting at the West Freeway Church of Christ in White Settlement, Texas, and took the opportunity to blast the crazy idea that the average American has the right to bear arms for self-defense. He said, he criticized the Texas church hero who saved 200 lives. It's the job of law enforcement to carry guns that kill. We just can't let the average American have guns in a crowded place. Gun control saves lives. Now, speaking in Montgomery, Alabama, Bloomberg said that it's the job of law enforcement. Of course, there are a couple problems with that argument, Bloomberg. Starting with number one, with the Bill of Rights. You know, the Second Amendment, the guarantee that the people have the right to keep and bear arms. I.e., Congress shall not infringe on that right. Another one, gloomy boy. The Supreme Court has said that the core purpose of the Second Amendment is to protect the right of self-defense. So, Bloomberg, you're on the wrong side of history. You're on the wrong side of the Constitution when you claim that average Americans should be disarmed and defenseless. I'm paraphrasing from this guy's article now because I get incensed. Secondly, gloomy boy. He enjoys the protection of a virtual frigging entourage of armed guards. Personally, this guy says, personally, I think that's great. I agree. I have no problem with that. But I can't afford my own private security team. I'm my own bodyguard. We are our own bodyguards. If he seriously believes that the only the police should have the power to draw a gun in self-defense or in defense of another, cool. But get rid of your own armed guards. I don't care what you replace them with. Have Hulk Hogan do it. I don't know. Or one of those. Who's that other guy? Chuck Zito. I always talk about he was a former Hell's Angel. He's a martial arts expert. Chuck Zito. He actually appeared on some of those wrestling shows, I think, with Hogan even. But yeah, have Chuck Zito go out there for you. See how effective he is when his head looks like Swiss cheese after some crazed maniac puts a few slugs into his brain. Here's what Gloomy said. You just do not want the average American carrying a gun in a crowded place. And the writer says, actually, I do want the average American to be able to exercise their right to bear arms, as more than 18 million Americans who possess a concealed carry license currently do. That also doesn't take into account the millions more who live in states that don't require a license or permit in order for legal gun owners to lawfully carry. How, you know, somebody pointed out, how sad as well that this guy, he's what he said. I'm going to read this direct. How sad as well that Bloomberg chose Montgomery, Alabama, to declare that people don't have a right to protect themselves. As civil rights activist and historian Charles Cobb noted not long ago, when Dr. Martin Luther King was mounting his first protests for equal rights in Montgomery, he knew the power of the gun for personal protection. And here's a quote. Protection was common, even if it wasn't publicly acknowledged. You couldn't live in any household in a rural southern community without guns, and people weren't afraid to use them. During the Montgomery, Alabama bus boycott, Reverend King had guns all over his house. Glenn Smiley, one of King's advisors, called King's home, quote unquote, an arsenal. That's a southern thing. I've been in houses where guns have been in the nightstand, under the pillow, in the chair. Now back to the article. He says, that may be a southern thing, but it too is a crime in Mike Bloomberg's world. We can't have all these guns stored so irresponsibly after all. Bloomberg's tone-deaf and hypocritical stance on self-defense and gun ownership place him at odds with tens of millions of Americans, as well as the rights, as the Bill of Rights and the constitutions of more than 40 states. Unfortunately, his position on the right to bear arms is also indistinguishable from every other Democrat running for president. Okay. In essence, here's what Bloomberg is saying. First, he's saying that the guy in the church who stood up and took out the attacker shouldn't have been there with a gun. That's number one. He then goes further to say the average American shouldn't be carrying a gun. That's what this is, a candidate for president. This is a candidate for president who is saying, in effect, that the Bill of Rights isn't sacrosanct. Because either, as one friend of mine pointed out astutely several years ago, either the Bill of Rights is sacrosanct or it's not. It's not a matter of one amendment versus another. The Bill of Rights is sacrosanct. That means whether you like it or not, Bloomberg and his own media company, by the way, no conflict there. His own media company can say what he wants, say what it wants. The New York Times, ditto. Now, when they lie, intentionally lie or intentionally omit, that's a different order. But that's, you know, that's for courts to decide at certain points. But yeah, I mean, they have that right. Do I like it when a mobster takes the Fifth Amendment? Maybe not. But guess what? That's his right. That's the protections. Speaking of the First Amendment, Covington Catholic High School student Nick Sandman, remember him? He's the guy that got into it with the Native American, the fake Native American. I don't think he was a fake Native American. He was just it was a fake protest. He gets a settlement from CNN. Now, why? It wasn't that CNN's, you know, he's not attacking their First Amendment right. He's attacking their right to libel him, to slander him. That's what he was attacking. And the courts have held that when it's malicious and it's not truth, then guess what? They are liable. So they're settling. There's the distinction. Just like when the nameless scumbag kid that walked into Parkland High School and shot it up, that wasn't a First Amendment case, a Second Amendment case. That wasn't a matter of the Second Amendment. That was a clear case of this guy shouldn't have had Second Amendment rights in the first place. He had already done things that had abused those. I'm not saying that, you know, when people say gangbangers have, well, I'm not saying, you know, no, felons shouldn't have firearms. We know that. But that's not what we're talking about with the Second Amendment. That's not what we're talking about with the First Amendment. The basic right of freedom of speech, freedom of religion, basic right to keep and bear arms, that's not under question. Except with Bloomberg and his fellow Dem candidates. Bloomberg is saying, and again, it's Bloomberg, not Bloomberg. It's Bloomberg, because he's just a thought of this guy in office is gloomy as hell. But Bloomberg is saying no. Now, he's flying in the face of the Supreme Court, believe it or not. The Supreme Court hasn't always been 100% friendly to the Second Amendment, but at its core, yes, it has. The Supreme Court has established that the right to keep and bear arms at its core is inviolate. Not according to Bloomberg, though. So, you know, I don't know where he's going to go in this. He's got all the money in the world. You know, he could get in late, although I'm not sure that's going to help him. But he could, you know. He's not having to spend a lot right now. By the way, Joe Biden is spending a ton. You know, I've talked about, it's no secret I'm an Iowa Hawkeye fan. I am going to be really, really glad when the Iowa caucuses are done, and I'll tell you why. Every Iowa game right now, you're seeing Biden campaign ads. You've seen others too. Pete Buttigieg or whatever his last name is, Buttigieg, or I just call him Buttigieg. He's running ads. Liz Warren has, you know, Pocahontas, Liawatha, whatever you want to call her. She's run ads. So, you know, I'm watching a perfectly good Hawkeye game, and I got to see stuff like that. I got to see ads from Joe friggin' Biden. Oh, speaking of Joe, quid pro Joe, here's a good one. Where did I see this? Oh, yeah, judge in the – I'm going to double-check this, but supposedly the judge in Hunter Biden's child support case has recused himself. And that was from WashingtonPundit.com, and it was dated December 31st, 2019. So it says – okay, here's – I'm going to read it. There's been a new wrinkle in the lawsuit against Hunter Biden for child support of his new son. The judge in the case just recused himself just hours after an attempt by a defrauded investor, Joel Kaplan, attempted to be made a party in the case by filing a witness statement from ex-Ukrainian prosecutor Viktor Shokin. Judge Don McSpadden of Independence County didn't give an explanation when he announced he was recusing himself at 10:20. He had been presiding over the case since Hunter's stripper baby mama, London Roberts, 28, filed suit in May for child support for their 16-month-old child. She has been demanding that Hunter hand over his financial records from the past 5 years. McSpadden's recusal came 2 hours after defrauded investor Joel Kaplan, who wants to be made a party in the case, filed a witness statement from ex-Ukrainian prosecutor Viktor Shokin. Shokin claimed he was fired in 2016 because he was leading an investigation into Burisma and refused to shut it down, despite pressure from Hunter's father, then VP Quid Pro Joe. Hunter's finances are currently in the spotlight over his former position at the Ukrainian energy company, which has been at the center of Hunter's entanglement in President Trump's impeachment. So who knows what the heck's going to happen. But, you know, these people, they won't stop. They'll stop at nothing. So, folks, protect your Second Amendment rights, please. When people like Bloomberg or even Joe Biden, Joe Biden attacked the concealed carry law. Here's what Quid Pro Joe had to say. Sunday, December 30th, a gunman opened fire at the West Freeway Church of Christ in White Settlement, Texas. The gunman shot two people before an armed person in the congregation shot him seconds after the gunman opened fire. One victim died and the other is in critical condition now. They were live streaming their Sunday service. So you can watch it, evidently. I'm not going to, but The congregation's members' protective gun carrying was possible thanks to a new law allowing Texans to carry gun in places of worship. The bill was signed in June 2019 by Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Of course, Quid Pro Joe called it irrational. He said, it is irrational. With all due respect to the governor of Texas, it's irrational what they're doing. And we're talking about loosening access to have guns, being able to take them into places of worship, store them in schools. It's just absolutely irrational. Yeah, guess what, Quid Pro? The senior minister said he is thankful for that law. He said, we lost two great men today, but it could have been a lot worse. And I'm thankful that our government has allowed us the opportunity to protect ourselves. Yeah, it's sad that a church has to, that you need open carry in a church. It is sad. It's sad that you have to go in and do that. I get that. I mean, a friend of mine has said, it's sad that you have to. It's sad, no doubt. You shouldn't have to, but you know what? As I've said before, during this show, during this episode, we have some sick, crazy people in this country and on this planet. Quid Pro Joe is one of them. Bloomberg's another. They don't believe in your right to keep and bear arms. So what I'm telling you, what I'm asking you, I should say, I'm asking you, root out those that are, that you know are anti-gun. If you've got a, if you've got a legislator in your district or even a local councilman who is anti-gun, root them out, point them out, work to get them unelected. Absolutely. We're talking about constitutional rights here. We're talking about safety in our country. We're talking about preservation of our country, frankly. So, yeah, get these people out. Quid Pro Joe being one, Bloomberg being another. Don't let these people keep serving in our government. Serving, Jesus. You're not serving. Don't let these self-serving people keep invading our government and our institutions and our way of life. That's what we should be talking about. We shouldn't be talking about whether it was right or not to take out a terrorist. We shouldn't be talking about whether we can defend our embassy or our air bases. That shouldn't even be a discussion. We shouldn't be talking about whether every little congressman needs to know about it before we do it. We already know. They've proven themselves that they can't keep their mouths shut. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about our basic rights, you, me. That's what we're talking about. So when Bloomberg, when Biden, and when all of them, I mean, every single one of them, when, you know, Beto O'Rourke stepped out of the race, dropped out of the race, but that guy actually said, we're coming to take your guns. Now, these are the same people that say it's immoral and it's impossible to go get, to root out 12 million to 20 million illegals. And it's impossible to do. It's not doable. Yet they think it's not impossible to go after 150 million guns. That's the kind of people you're dealing with. That's the kind of thought processes that we have leading our country. And not leading it, frankly. That's the kind of people we are paying for to live off of us who aren't serving their country. That's what we have. So, I've said my piece for today. As I've said, support your own Second Amendment rights. Root out those you know that are anti-Second Amendment. Bloomberg, that means you. Quid Pro Joe, that means you. Mayor Buttgag, that means you. Beto O'Rourke, even, that means you, even if you're not a candidate. Get out of our government. Stop infringing. If you're going to infringe, get out. Go leech somewhere else. We can't afford you, is what it boils down to. We just can't. So get out. And if they won't get out, then it's our job, you, me, our neighbors, it's our job to get them out. Get them out of our state governments, get them out of our federal government, get them out of our local government. We've got to stop. I mean, we keep saying that there's nothing we can do, the people elect them. Then, damn it, we need to get out and get them unelected. That's what we need to do. Leave you with this. Jeff Beck, head for backstage pass. Y'all have a good one, folks. Thanks for being here. Y'all have a good night and a good week. Good night, folks.
Bye-bye.